Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about seed treatments, especially with regard to soybeans. But a lot of these seed treatments can be used on just about every crop out there. If you've got any questions for us, or if you just would like to talk about anything that's happening on your farm right now, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. Before we do, I'll just throw in a couple of things on soybean seed treatments. We've really got three main categories that we're going to be talking about today: fungicides, insecticides, and then biologicals, or as we often call them, natural products. We are big believers in doing something in terms of seed treatment on most crops, including soybeans, but you always have to look at, what's the return on investment? Okay, if I'm going to spend X number of dollars, hopefully I'm going to at least be able to double that. And, you know, I guess we look at it that way because, and you might say, well, man, double, that's a lot. Yeah, it is. But we figure we've got all this risk as farmers, and you never know what's going to happen with the crop, with the weather, with everything else. So we've got to have something that typically can pay us double the money back, if not even triple, before we're going to invest in it in an input. So as agronomists, that's typically what we would recommend. But just with soybean seed treatments, for example, there are so many new fungicides that have come out. The insecticide, there's really only one choice. It's the Neonic, but they aren't very expensive. They're very safe to humans, systemic in the plant, everything else. And by the way, some people will talk about the Neonics. Oh my goodness, they're going to kill the bees. Look, if you're putting a seed treatment on, the odds that you're going to kill a whole bunch of bees are awfully slim.
Well, there's been plenty of university research on this in recent years, too, showing it's safe.
Right, it is. So where the neonics kill the bees is from post-emerge use. That's why we always say don't use those neonics post. Use them as a seed treatment. It's fantastic. I was just, I don't remember what I was reading, Darren, from over the weekend, and it was from a couple hundred years ago, and they were using nicotine as seed treatment. And realized it had insecticidal properties 200 years ago. So, I mean, it's the same basic concept. It's the same chemical family. It works very well. But anyway, lots of new fungicides. We've got that insecticide. And then on the biological side, there's so many things. We put about, it's over 30 different biologicals on our soybean seed now to help us get more nutrients into the plant, to help us get faster emergence in cold soils, inoculant to pump more nitrogen into the plant. So a lot of good biologicals and naturals. We're going to talk about all these categories today. But right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
I got kind of an interesting one to start with here, Brian, and I'm gonna hand you some samples. But look at the one says 1.1 and the one says 3.3. You did different grid sizes to see what would come up, and was really impressed with the results. We'd been talking about taking smaller grids, so we thought he would give that a shot.
Wait, 1.1 and 3.3. 1.1
acre versus 3.3 acre grid size.
Yep.
And I just handed you the pH maps, first of all, from the 1.1 and the 3.3. And this is one of the things that we saw on our farm when we were trying to adjust pH. That smaller grid was very important in that. And I see the same thing here on JR's test. But so I did the 1.1 versus 3.3. So I passed that over for you to take a look at. And also, he said, if you notice on the field map, the part that juts down, there's a 20-acre piece that juts down, had some trees on it that we just cleared a couple years ago. And I wanted to ask you about that area because I've never seen potassium numbers as high as where we had those trees. We seldom see a 300 part per million, but, man, we got some really high areas down there. Just wondering why that would be. And also, how often would you recommend taking the smaller grid size, and is there something specific you would take those small grids for?
Okay, so first of all, why would the potassium be higher? Because nothing ever left the ground. If you just took native prairie and nothing ever left, so nothing was ever baled. If the grass was grazed, the animals were right there and basically left the potassium still in the field. I mean, that's the reason why.
Yeah, if you've got a fence line there too, JR, pull one out in the fence line too, and you'll see a similar effect.
Right, but this is what we talk about all the time here. Potassium is being depleted by the average farmer in the United States, and I believe it's the same thing in Canada as well. So we've got to get more potassium out there. That's the biggest yield-limiting factor that we typically see in most farms. I'm not saying in every farm, but on a lot of farms, it's just lack of K. And the good news with K is it doesn't leach away unless you have really light soil and lots of rainfall. So you can put it out there and it's going to be there until your plant uses it up. Now, in terms of small grid sizes, right away when we talk about small grids, people go, oh my goodness, you're going to spend all this money. Look, it doesn't cost that much more. You can typically get a much discounted rate on soil testing when you're running that many more soil tests. So just for example, when we're using the Ag PhD Soils app, we're doing 1 acre grids on our farm on over 2,000 acres of our ground. We farm about 3,200. But anyway, when we do that, it only costs us $16 an acre. If we're going 5 acre grids, it costs $5. Okay, so if you did the simple math there, you go, wait a second, that's $25 really versus $16. For a sample. Yep, that's right. We get a heavily discounted rate when you're running lots of tests. So that helps. But I'm not saying you have to run 1 acre grids all the time. I mean, I love it on our farm just because of all the research we do. And then we have more things to talk to you about on a regular basis here because we have all the data. But for the average farmer, I would just say every once in a while, at least once every 10 years, I would be running 1 acre grids instead of 2.5 or 5. And the reason why is because we want the opportunity to even up our ground. By doing variable rate applications out there, you can make things much more even and have the small grid size once, and then you've got however long you want to do it, you know, the next 4 years, the next 6 years, the next 8 years, 10 years, whatever it is, that things might go a little uneven again. But we want to try to at least get them once evened up. And it saves you a lot of money on liming, and it also helps you not screw it up. Because when he went to the 1 acre grids, what we found is there are a bunch of spots that needed no lime. On the 3.3 acre grids, it looked like every spot needed lime. So it'll save you a lot of money if you're going to lime. It'll probably pay for itself, and then it doesn't screw up your yields. Because you get that pH too high, your yields go down. We're going to talk soybean seed treatments right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from Farm Shop MFG.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844 844- 44AgPhD, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. We've got Mike on with us right now down in Iowa with the question. Mike, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Darren. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a question for you. As we were combining, we found this, our corn had a pollination issue, and we got to doing some research back, and we had hired an airplane to put on fungicide for us.
Okay.
We took them the fungicide, we took them some foliar fertilizer, gallon per acre, and some insecticide.
Okay.
They sprayed it, and we think we got a pollination issue from it. So we got their spray records, coverage map, and unknown to us, they put in non-ionic surfactant.
At what stage was this corn sprayed?
Well, we think that it was, it was pollinated or tasseled, and so we thought the timing was fine.
Yep. Yeah. Go ahead.
We ended up with some ears. They look like popcorn ears. You know, they're just big, kind of brown kernels. They're all rounds. There's no flats on the ears or nothing. So I was just wondering what we should do.
Sure.
We got their coverage map, and we didn't want any non-ionic surfactant in there because we were putting in the foliar fertilizer.
Right.
But they put it in, so we read the label of the non-ionic surfactant was 2 to 8 ounces per 100 gallons.
Yep.
They put it in at a quart. A quart per 100 gallons.
Okay.
Just kind of wondering what we ought to do.
Sure. All right. Let me ask you this. Did you have that same variety in any other fields?
Yes.
And it was fine in the other fields?
No. It was about 30 bushel difference in one field, and the field that I'm telling you about was more like 100 bushels difference.
Okay, so it wasn't perfect in other fields. I'm just trying to, and here's the reason why. We saw your call come in during our break, and Darren and I were just talking about it quick, and the first thing Darren said to me is, well, we'll have to ask him a couple questions because, and Darren looks at way more fields than I do, and he said, I saw all kinds of fields that had pollination issues this year just because of the way the year was that didn't even have fungicide on there. And we're not saying, you know, that the fungicide did not cause any problems. It may have.
As soon as you said non-ionic surfactant, that made me a little nervous.
Me too. So that's why I asked you right away, you know, what stage you were at. Because as a general statement here, I will just tell you, we haven't seen surfactant causing any issues after the corn has fully tasseled. But if it was, let's say, partially tasseled and it was just starting to pollinate, well, then yes, that could potentially have caused some issues there. So I guess it's really tough, too, when we're this late in the season. So Darren and I have been agronomists. So I've been a full-time agronomist for 30 years now, and it's always a challenge when we're dealing with the stuff after the fact. If it would have been, let's say, 2 weeks after this got applied or a month after it got applied or whatever, now we can walk out in fields. We can see if, oh, hey, maybe there's a skip over here or something like that because you mentioned the coverage maps. Are you finding any correlation with these coverage maps? Were there any skips, and did it show up on your yield monitor or anything like that?
Yes. Where they didn't spray, it looks perfect.
Yep. Well, that narrows it down.
Yep. So you're saying 100 bushels difference where they sprayed versus where they didn't?
At least.
Oh, my goodness.
It was 250 on our monitor to 260.
Yep.
Where they missed, and it was 100 and, well, it went as low as 84 up to about 150 where they applied it.
Yeah. How many acres are we talking about that got affected?
Roughly. 90 is the biggest part, but the whole field kind of got 180 of it. It seemed like it was more one hybrid. and in the other field, it was the same hybrid.
Sure.
And we found out that that hybrid has an extended pollination
window. Yep. Yep. I was just about to say that.
Which
yes.
normally is a good thing.
Right.
But it did make it more susceptible to this application, unfortunately.
Let me just ask you, too, what was the fertilizer that got applied?
It was a foliar based fertilizer, 2400 from Conklin.
Oh, okay. So just some liquid urea, probably. And you just said a gallon to the acre?
Yes.
Okay. And what kind of insecticide?
I think it was a generic Warrior.
Okay. I just
Firestone.
Yeah, that's fine.
Firestone.
Okay. I was just curious if it was a pyrethroid or if it was an organophosphate like Lorsban, because Lorsban would add even more burn, and then we would have expected even more pollination problem. Because, yeah, Warrior, we don't see any issues with. A gallon of urea, we don't see any issues with. And then what was the fungicide that got used, if you remember?
I think it was a generic Quilt.
Okay.
It was,
That's fine.
Can't think.
Yep.
Start with a P.
Yeah. Believe me, I struggle with it too because there are a million names out there, all these generics and everything else. It's getting confusing. But okay. All I was trying
and
to
those,
get at.
Those were all put in at labeled rate.
Yeah.
You know, those were all
sure.
put in it.
Yeah, because I wouldn't worry at all about Warrior, a gallon of urea, no problem, and Quilt, we don't typically see any issues with. But yes, I hate to say it, but it does sound to us like it was that surfactant, and especially when you have yield data and you have coverage maps and there's a correlation there from where they didn't apply to your yield. You know, I guess a lot of times this ends up going to insurance. That company's insurance and your insurance work the thing out, and hopefully you get a fair settlement on that. So that's generally how we've handled things like that in the past, is we just let the insurance companies get it all worked out. If there isn't insurance involved, then you would just have to try to work with that person or that company individually. But, I mean, you're talking about a pretty massive loss there.
Yeah. Six figures.
Yep. So hopefully there's some insurance involved, and we don't need to get into all that. But if it was me, I mean, that's the first place that I'm going to go. I try to keep this out of as much as we can, you know, suing somebody and all this kind of stuff, because you spend all kinds of money on lawyers and everything else. So if you can work something out without having to get it that far, that'd be ideal. You know, if the insurance companies can handle it, that also would be ideal. But yeah, I'm sorry to hear this, and it's especially it's sad when you gave them exactly what you wanted to put on and then something else got thrown in the tank. So I can understand from their perspective too, because typically when corn is tasseled, you know, a lot of times we are talking about adding some type of product along with the fungicide to give it a little better performance. But yeah, our belief is that it wasn't fully tasseled and certainly wasn't pollinated at that point, and that most likely caused the problem.
Okay.
So yeah, sorry. Hopefully this never happens to you again. I wouldn't get soured on, you know, making a foliar application or anything, because we have guys do it successfully all the time. It's just we just have to be really careful about when it's sprayed and what they're spraying. And hopefully you can get the whole thing worked out. But, yeah, I think you and we are on the same page that it sounds like the surfactant caused the problem.
Okay. All right.
Well, thank good luck,
you.
Mike. You bet. Yep. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Yeah, those are the calls that it's unfortunate that occasionally we do have to take. You know, like I said, Darren and I have been agronomists for a really long time. We've been out on a number of issues over the years, and that's part of the reason why we talk so much, so extensively about many of these products, how to use them, because we just don't want issues to happen for you on your farm. All right, we are going to get to talking about soybean seed treatments after this on Ag PhD Radio.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer amaranth and water hemp with Tough 5-EC. Manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5-EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior in our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about seed treatment use in soybeans on today's program and take your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's start off with Dare McDuffie here with Valent. Dare, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. With the soybean seed treatments, we hear so often, they're only for when we're really wet. Well, we had a dry year for the most part, and we still saw some good gains out of soybean seed treatment. So going to be an interesting discussion today. Let's start off, Dare, what did you see this year with seed treatments in the country?
Certainly. I mean, we did have sort of a dry late summer and fall, but I think when we're thinking about a dry year overall, we also want to investigate when does that water happen. And I think you're seeing a little bit more of it kind of pond a little bit at the beginning of the year, which is when that seed treatment is really going to help, especially if you're controlling for diseases like Pythium. You know, something that if you've got waterlogged soils, you've got that seed sitting in the ground for longer, it really gives it an opportunity to attack your beans and affect your stand.
Well, there certainly are a lot of farmers that we talk to that are planting beans earlier and earlier. They're seeing more yield, and you're right, that seed is going to have to lay in the ground a little longer.
Mm-hmm. And this is a time of year where you might see an article kind of pop up in your feed or somewhere, and it might, you know, it's always the "Are seed treatments worth it?" It's a popular, you know, annual article to be written. And I think the newest version is, you know, are the insecticides worth it? And, you know, I just want to, this has been a great year for paperwork. So I've actually got a lot of data in this year, you know, since people haven't been running around as much. And we had a great data set, you know, 15 trials with university professional researchers. And We had a fungicide only in there, and then we had a couple standards, and including our Intego Sweet soybeans that included insecticides, and we saw a 1.5 bushel increase with almost all of those insecticides.
Well, with the price of soybeans today, that's a pretty good return on investment.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of the differentiation in these packages is between the fungicides. You know, you get more fungicides that come around a little bit more often than insecticides. But I just wanted to bring that up, thinking it's something that we don't spend as much time on. Because you are right. It is about protecting your seed and getting that investment back. And choosing a full soybean seed treatment package is an important part of that.
I've always thought of seed treatments as insurance to some degree. Now, obviously, there are some things you can do to help improve yield as well, but you've got to keep the seed alive to start with. And when I think about insurance, with the price of soybean seed now considerably higher than what it's been in the past, not year on year necessarily, but you look at the average bag of soybeans now costing $50, $60, and that's a lot of investment you've got to protect.
Exactly. And the same thing is, as we pack more technology into these seeds, it becomes paramount that you get exactly what you're paying for on that seed. And I think seed treatment is the thing that kind of gets it through that tough first month. I mean, soybeans, once you get past the first month, you really got to hurt them to slow them down. But it's that first month where they can be really susceptible and, a fungus or an insect can take it out. And that's what we're trying to remove from the situation. Get it through that first month. I always describe it as a race, and we're just trying to get it through that first part of the race so it can finish it off by itself.
I like that you said that it's not just, well, this is going to protect it for the few days or week or two that it takes to get that seed out of the ground. You're actually going to get some protection into the season for a little ways. A lot of times when we're looking at insects, if we can stop that first flush with the seed treatment and keep some of those things off that seed and young seedling, we're way ahead of the game.
Correct. And within Intego Sweet soybeans, we have clothianidin. It's a really strong insecticide. It's really good against below ground pests. And, you know, every once in a while you might get a little bit of above ground feeding. And as long as they don't really get to the stems, you'll generally grow out of that. But it's those below ground insects that really can weaken your plant, turn it into a weed. You don't want those lower performing soybean plants in your field. You want them all to be similar, performing the same, and yielding out the same at the end of the year.
Great stuff, Dare McDuffie. One person that's happy that I get to talk to here is Dare, that's happy you got to do some more paperwork this year with everything that's gone on. I'm not a fan of paperwork, Dare, but glad you got a bunch of studies, and thanks for sharing
I'm
that.
I'm just ahead of the game.
I love it. Dare, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Let's head down to Iowa. We've got Larry on with us right now, who got hit by the derecho storm. Larry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Darren. I'll try to explain this fast. I'll probably stutter. I'm going to have a lot of volunteer corn next year. I want to maintain my rotation. The volunteer corn will be triple stack corn coming back up. I want to go back to E3 beans again. And Iowa State is saying do not till your ground. And you got any opinions or thoughts or? What do you got to say about that?
We almost always have opinions and thoughts here, Larry. So I will just tell you from our own experience in having the exact same thing happen on our farm as what happened on your farm. This happened years ago. We had a lot of volunteer corn, and we just had to go spray twice. So it wasn't the end of the world. Volunteer corn herbicide, if you spray it by itself, costs a couple bucks. If you're going to mix it together with Enlist, though, you're going to have to bump the rate. So you might want to switch products to something like Fusilade, and you have to up the rate a little bit. So it might cost you $4. But I'm just trying to say it's not like it's the end of the world. I can also tell you we've done a lot of side-by-side work with volunteer corn where we've tilled it. We've had much more volunteer corn as opposed to, and by till, I don't mean mowed plow. Had we moldboard plowed, then we could have less. But by doing what we now call conventional till, which could be disking, you know, field cultivating, all that kind of stuff, you're going to see more volunteer corn most likely by a large margin compared to no-till. The first year that we noticed that when we did side-by-side stuff was over 25 years ago, and I was very surprised. It's like, I mean, right to the line. And I'm going, wow, the no-till just left the corn out there. And there was some, but there certainly wasn't as much as when we tilled the ground. But if you say, well, I need to do the tillage because otherwise I'm not going to get a good seed bed, a good stand, I'm not going to have as much yield next year, it costs $4 extra, you know, to spray a second time with volunteer corn herbicide. And chances are you're going to be out there spraying anyway. So just throw volunteer corn in on your first pass, throw a volunteer corn herbicide, throw volunteer corn herbicide in your second pass, and okay, you should be in pretty
good
shape.
What about this, though, Bram? What about spring tillage versus fall tillage? Because that's going to make a big difference, too.
Is it?
I think if you leave those seeds laying out there on the surface of the ground and let them get all that weather, wetting and drying and so forth.
I agree.
It's going to be a problem either way.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to make a lot of difference if you till in the fall or spring or both. You are going to have more volunteer corn. But like I say, I just wouldn't get that worried about it. As somebody who's gone through it ourselves on our farm more than once, just spray a couple times and you're fine. You just have to look at it kind of like any weed. If let's say you had a disaster with whatever, water hemp, and there are a million plants out there and they're just getting started, you're probably not going to wait to pull the trigger. You're going to go, ooh, I got a problem. I want to get it sprayed. Too often, I think we look at volunteer corn as just an eyesore, but it can be a big yield robber when it gets as bad as what you're describing to us. So, nope, we wouldn't get that worried, wouldn't even change the program a whole lot. Just throw volunteer corn herbicide in a couple times. But, like I say, there is antagonism between the volunteer corn herbicide and 2,4-D, or the Enlist one. And it's the same thing for any of our listeners who are going to spray dicamba with a volunteer corn herbicide. You have to up the rate on that volunteer corn herbicide because it won't work the same as it used to when you just threw it in with Roundup.
There has a lot of ground here been turned black.
Yep.
And probably more stock bales than I have ever seen in my life.
Yep.
I'm 67 years old.
Sure.
And there's not the cattle around here, so I don't know what they're going to do with the bales.
Yep, I don't know either, but I agree with you on everything you're saying. Yep.
And I did not till yet.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's up to you. If you can get a good seed bed and you're fine with going no-till, I mean, you will have less volunteer corn, but all I'm saying is it's not like it's that big a deal to go spray a second time.
Yes. Can I run something else by you?
I'll tell you what. We got to take a really quick commercial break, and right after that, we'll get to your next question, if that's all right.
I would be glad to wait for you. Thank you.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so once again, we are talking about soybean seed treatments and answering your phone calls at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Enfuro Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
We now bring you an important news bulletin. This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to trusted herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. And you certainly know Nufarm exclusive Weedmaster. For decades, Weedmaster has been the go-to herbicide for consistent burndown weed control in a huge variety of crops, and in range and pasture management, too. Don't let yield-robbing weeds stand in the way of your progress or profits. Nufarm and Weedmaster Herbicide, here to help.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. Today on the show, we've been talking about soybean seed treatments and answering your phone calls at 844-442-4743. Right before the break, we were talking to Larry from Iowa. Larry, apologize about that. Thanks for holding on through the break. What's your next question?
Well, thank you, guys. My brother was hauling gravel into a semi-turnaround for a father-son operation.
Okay.
And there was some stuff off to the side. He asked the father what that was. And the father said, well, that's carbon. And my brother Lauren said, no, it isn't. That's fly ash. And the guy says, no, it's carbon. We're going to put that on in lieu of P and K and lime, and it's available immediately. You got any idea what they were talking about?
What kind of ash did you say?
Say that again.
Okay. The farmer said it was carbon, and your brother said it was what?
No, it was fly ash.
Fly ash.
Fly ash comes from a coal-fired power plant.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's exactly what it looks like, and we used to haul it to feedlots.
Yep.
For base in mud feedlots.
Yep.
And these guys, I assume it's coming from a corn processing plant, and these guys are going to use it in lieu of P&K and lime. It says they're not going to put P&K and lime on their fields anymore and use this product instead.
Sure. Look, there are a lot of things that people will end up putting on their ground, and there are ash-type products that get used on fields all the time. We just have to look at, and they are high in carbon, but they then have some other nutrients. We just are always curious, okay, well, how many nutrients do they actually have? So I don't have any big issue with this. I would just like to see what the analysis is. And then we have to be a little bit careful in terms of saying, oh, it's all available immediately. Because when we look at like a carbon to nitrogen ratio, for example, then if there is high carbon, it will bind up the nitrogen for a while. So, you know, without having any analysis in front of me, I don't know exactly what to tell you. All I know is it does make sense to me. We've heard of guys doing this same thing, and we just have to look at the analysis of it, see what it really is, and then kind of go from there. And then, kind of like we say all the time here, it's a lot of trial and error. So as farmers, we're all for trying different things. Sometimes they may seem crazy. Just don't try them on tons of acres. So like for these guys, if it was their first time, and I have no idea if it's their first time, if they've done it for 20 years, but if it's the first time doing something, don't do it on all your acres. No matter how great somebody promises you it's going to be, it's certainly worth it to try it on a few acres, go from there, see if you have success, and then you'd be fine. But yeah, I get it. I understand what you're talking about.
They are first timers. I know they are.
Yep.
They build a huge hoop building, bought an end loader, bought a floater, and bought a floater loader belt. So they're, but these guys kind of like to look for the easy dollar too. And I'm, I question anything they tell me.
Well, Yeah, it sounds like they've invested a lot, so I certainly hope it works out for them. Although, you know, for a lot of those things they did invest in, they could get a bunch of their money back out of it at some point. So, yeah, I wouldn't be super worried about it. It's just I'd really, really want to see an analysis. And to take that one step further, very often when companies are trying to get rid of products like that, because that's usually what it comes to, I tell people, hey, get your own test. I know they're going to tell you it's this. They're going to show you tests, but I'd still take samples. I take independent samples, and I would have those sent into a lab myself so I know for sure what I'm putting on my soil. And that holds true with anything, lime, gypsum, manure, compost, you know, anything you're going to put on your soil, get your own test, and then you really know. It's very inexpensive to test. But, I mean, let's face it, as farmers, we got hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake with our crop out there every year. I just don't want to have a big screw-up.
You know, I wish I knew more about it. I don't know whether I should ask him if he's got an analysis on it or get one, you know, the next time I'm down there with gravel and I don't know anything about it. It's interesting.
Yep, it is. So, yeah, if you get the chance, that would be great. Or even just say, hey, can you give me a sample of that and then send it in for analysis yourself and see what they tell you. So, yeah, we'd be curious. If you find that out, let us know.
Well, I'm going to work on that.
All right. Sounds good. You bet.
Thanks for talking with me.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Larry. Appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Let's head down to Nebraska. We got Travis Gustafson with us right now with Syngenta talking about seed treatments for soybeans. Travis, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I have to think that 2020 was a pretty interesting year to work with some of the seed treatments you get to work with, because they really stuck out this year, like Saltro, for example. Really, wow, I saw some tremendous trials.
Yeah, Saltro seed treatment has been a wonderful. We just introduced it this year. It's been a wonderful year to launch it because we saw a lot of sudden death out there, and we really had some good side by side visuals where, you know, that Saltro protected from sudden death.
Okay, I saw the same thing. Mid-season, I was seeing guys putting pictures online and sending us pictures. Wow, look at the difference that this new seed treatment made. How did the yield data turn out this year?
We're still in the process of getting some of these yields in, but right now it looks like if you compared it to untreated or with no sudden death protection, it's going to be in that 5 to 6 bushel range, at least on some of the stuff I've done. And then if you say compare it to Olivo, we look at about a 4 bushel yield advantage over Olivo.
Yeah, I think when we look at sudden death syndrome, 2020 opened a lot of eyes. We saw it way further north and west than we've seen it in the past. It's certainly one that guys are going to have to be aware of in the areas that impacts. But talk to us about the other seed treatments and what you were seeing out there this year and what growers should be looking for.
Well, early on in the season, when we compare, say, Saltro and Olivo, I think it's fairly well known Olivo's been around for a while, and typically as the Olivo treatments come out of the ground, we see a lot of burning on the cotyledons and just general slower growth, just because it has metabolized through the active ingredient. And Saltro is unique in that the active ingredient doesn't really get taken up in the plant quite as easily as Olivo, so it stays in the root zone where it needs to be active. But also, because it doesn't get taken up in the plant, it doesn't really cause any phytotoxicity or any of those burning type of effects. So the plant's just a lot easier. It takes off a lot easier out of the ground and doesn't have to work through that stress early on. That's the main difference we see. And then, of course, the sudden death control later on is as good or better than Olivo when we get later in the season.
I think it's going to be interesting, too, as we see a big push for soybeans getting planted earlier. That makes it tougher to fight SDS, and we certainly need some of those treatments to help us out. And like I say, if we can not slow down the seed at all at the same time, that's a good thing.
Yeah, when we go earlier and earlier in the year, I mean, now there's a lot of guys planting beans before they plant their corn. That cold, wet soil is, you know, obviously you'd have your other disease like Phytophthora and Pythium, but sudden death, the Fusarium fungus loves those cool, wet soils, and when the beans are under a little bit of stress, it infects a lot more easily. So you got to have that protection on, especially if you're trying for earlier planting. You know, universities routinely show that earlier planted beans will yield more at the end of the season. And so as we push those planting dates earlier and earlier, we have to protect that seed from all sorts of diseases.
Got about 30 seconds left, Travis, but dry land Nebraska farmers are worried about dry soils. How do seed treatments work there? What do you like to see?
I still like to see seed treatments on those, but as you move west and you've got the drier soils, you're probably not going to run into as much sudden death pressure. But the basic fungicide and insecticide packages are still worth their money. You know, especially as we're seeing more higher commodity prices show up in beans, these seed treatments are going to pay for themselves pretty easily now. So if you got an insecticide on the seed, you're going to protect from some of those insect pests. And just having a well-rounded, full-spectrum disease package will help you in about any situation, whether it's dry or wet.
Sure.
But when we got these higher bean prices, you got to protect your seed.
Yeah, I look at it this way, too. You have one chance to put that seed treatment on, no chance to go back and do it later, and you don't know what the weather's going to do for sure. Travis Gustafson with Syngenta, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability and boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about soybean seed treatments on today's show. Also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Iowa. We've got Troy Bauer with us right now with BASF. Troy, how are you?
Just fine. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We're talking soybean seed treatments today, and I know there were a lot of growers planting early into some cool, wet conditions. We did see some major differences this year. I know it varies year to year on what the pressure is going to be in these types of things, but talk to us a little bit about soybean seed treatments, what you're seeing out in the field, and what you're recommending going into 2021.
You bet. I think that growers, given the price of commodity prices they're seeing now, they're going to try to maximize their yield potential next year. And I believe that early planting is probably one of the practices that they're going to continue to trend with. And one of the things that growers can have issues with when they plant early is sudden death syndrome. And we've got a seed treatment that provides proven protection against sudden death syndrome in Alevo seed treatment.
Well, you know, sudden death moved this year. Why did we see it in areas where growers just haven't documented sudden death syndrome before? What's happening with that disease?
Yeah, that's a good question. So sudden death syndrome seems to continue to spread as growers continue to grow soybeans, expand their soybean acres. It seems like SDS continues to track with where they plant. Usually, in my observations, as growers continue to plant soybeans on the acres where they hadn't before, it seems like soybean cyst nematodes follows 1 to 2 years after, and then a couple years after that, SDS follows. And so it's not as if one of those pests caused the others, but it seems like those two pests do kind of commingle together, and soybean cyst nematode can exacerbate the situation with SDS. And so as growers continue to grow soybeans, they likely will see more SDS in their fields, unfortunately.
You know, one other factor this year, Troy, that I noticed a correlation with was compaction. Coming out of 2018 and 2019, there are so many growers that had issues, and I know our farm did too, with compacted areas that they just hadn't been able to deal with and correct. And man, where those compaction spots were, the SDS looked even worse. Have you noticed the same thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of cultural things that we can do to help alleviate SDS symptoms in growers' fields. And drainage is certainly one of those things. And but unfortunately, in some of those situations, as we harvest in the fall or even prepare fields in the springtime, we can have a little bit of compaction that occurs. And wherever we do have compaction in fields, SDS seems to rear its ugly head a little bit more. So anything we can do to help alleviate the compaction in growers' fields, improve drainage, all those things will help reduce the effect of SDS in growers' fields.
You know, when you mentioned Alevo, I got thinking about, and I know you were talking about sudden death syndrome, but as soon as you said Alevo, I thought, man, I talked to a lot of farmers that said they're using some Alevo for help on soybean cyst nematode. Talk to us about that. What did you learn with that this year and other nematodes as well?
Yeah, so it's really interesting that we've got a compound that actually controls or helps provide protection against sudden death syndrome and nematodes such as soybean cyst nematodes. We continue to see the soybean cyst nematodes as a pest expand as growers continue to grow more soybean acres every year. And Alevo really provides very good protection around the base of that root against nematodes such as soybean cyst nematodes. So we'll see a nice positive yield response if growers do have soybean cyst nematodes in their fields. And like I said, Alevo is a very unique compound that does have activity on both nematodes and SDS.
Talking with Troy Bauer with BASF about soybean seed treatments. Certainly saw a lot of pressure this year with sudden death syndrome and with soybean cyst nematode. Troy, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
You bet. Thanks so much. You have a great day.
Yep, you as well. Yeah, I think when we talk about nematodes contributing to other problems, it's like we've talked about for many, many years about if you have one stress, then you get another stress, and the impact of that second stress is that much more. And I know the nematode-infested fields, it's been a challenge fighting some of these other problems like sudden death syndrome. We've seen a lot of growers turning to these great soybean seed treatments that we've got to choose from now to get that job done. Brian, we had a question come in. You want to wait for the phone line?
Go ahead.
There we go. Oh, there's
we don't
Janelle.
Have a lot of
time. Okay, we got Mark from Wisconsin on here with a question. Mark, how are you doing?
Good, yourself?
Good, good. I was just waiting for you to get done talking to Janelle. She's nicer to talk to than Brian or me.
Well, obviously. Yeah, my question, and this is going to sound kind of crazy, but doing some thought research, I jokingly said after we were done with the pot, we had all this leftover seed. And I said, oh, well, we could just
combine
dump it back in and combine it.
Let me guess, it won.
It did really well.
Yep.
It has for us, too, sometimes. Not every time, but quite often.
Yeah, so what's your question?
Usually, at least in the top third, I would guess.
Yep.
So is there a reason we don't plant all our fields like that?
The biggest thing that a lot of people, okay, especially if you listen to the really high-yield farmers, they'll talk about, hey, we want consistent, even emergence. You are not going to get that if you plant a bunch of different varieties because some of them just emerge quicker than others, and they have a little more vigor early on. You're just going to see more inconsistencies there. So it shouldn't make sense that it should be, you know, this great yield. My theory on it is it's kind of like hybrid corn. What happens when you cross-pollinate things? Well, then usually it ends up with a more vigorous plant. So it's maybe that. It's maybe the fact that there's going to be pollen shed for a much longer period of time in that field. I don't know exactly why it is. But yeah, we very commonly have had that same thing happen. Now, I think one of the reasons why a lot of people don't want to do that is because they say, well, man, this one hybrid beat the worst one here by 50 bushels. So I think I can outguess the weather and everything else, and I'm going to plant the top three varieties, and they just never seem to be the top varieties. So I will tell you, too, like on our farm, we have a variable, a multi-hybrid planter, so we can run two different hybrids out there and switch, and we're doing that in about every field, and I think we gain a little bit from that. But, yeah, we haven't done enough studies on that to say, well, the blend always wins or the blend, you know, a lot of times doesn't. I don't know. But, yeah, we've seen the exact same thing you're talking about several times ourselves.
Okay.
So I wish I had a better answer for you there, but maybe you want to do a little more experimentation. Just start dumping a little bit of different varieties in every box and see how it turns out. I don't know, and run some more comparisons. But it's encouraging when something that we say, I'll just do this, and then it turns out to be one of the best things on your farm. I mean, that is kind of fun.
It is. All right, I'll keep experimenting.
Okay, sounds good. Let us know how you turn out next year.
Okay, take care.
Yep, thanks, Bye. Mark. Appreciate it.
All right, we were talking about lime a little bit earlier. Got a question from Brian, and he said, what would you say to educate us a little bit more on the use of granulated lime compared to conventional ag lime?
Well, I don't know what granulated lime means, but I know this.
I'm assuming you mean pelleted. That's what I thought when I saw it, but he does say granulated.
All I know is you want a lime that's really fine, and what you're looking for ultimately is the ECCE score, so you can compare different lime sources out there, and then cost. So it's ECCE versus cost, and to sum it up very quickly, that's what I would say.
All right, another quick one. We've been talking about fall fertilizer. Got some feedback from a South American farmer who said, we get too much winter rain. We can't use fall fertilizer where we're at. How about you?
Yeah, we get all kinds of winter rain. It's called snow. And we don't have any issue putting fall fertilizer on because our ground is frozen for, generally speaking, 5 months out of the year. So fall, to us, if it's late fall, that's basically spring. For you, my point is that it's an application that's done in, let's call it right now, in the middle of November, but the ground's going to freeze the next couple of weeks. So if I apply it now, it's just like me applying that same fertilizer April 1st when the ground thaws.
Yeah, there really is a lot of difference. It's fun, though, and thank you for the feedback. Really appreciate that, because it's fun just looking. I know when Brian and I got a chance to go down to Brazil, we were very interested in the farming practices, and it was neat to see farmers going to no-till for the completely opposite reasons that guys in our area were. We have not enough rain, and we're trying to conserve it, and guys in Brazil where we were at had too much rain and using the same practice. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.